and is now on course to become the world's biggest economy, even sooner than predicted pre-pandemic. But now, as the world undergoes changes unseen in decades, China alongside Russia seem to be embroiled in a battle with the West, both in terms of economies and military might, a battle which the West seems to be on the losing side. Amid simmering tensions between the two sides, the former British Prime Minister says the Ukraine war is an indication of the West's diminishing dominance. Tony Blair stated that the West's dominance is coming to an end as China rises to superpower status in partnership with Russia at one of the most significant inflection points in centuries.
The collective West needs to take into account now is that they are not alone. They need to stop their imperialist way of approaching how they see the world. They tend to say, well, the global worlds, but when they say the global world, they only mean maybe 15% of the population. But the problem now is that they don't have the weight they used to have, and they need to take into account that you have an emerging world, and we are living the last days of the imperialistic West.
From trade wars against China to sanctions on many countries, including Russia, Iran, and Venezuela, the West has in the past decade went on a rampage against any nation not willing to play by its rules. But now, the West's risky games have backfired, and signs of distress are multiplying, with falling currency valuation, social crisis, inflation, poverty, and much more. Those coercive measures also, however, push targeted nations closer to each other, setting the foundations of a multilateral world. In the 1960s, while the US was putting a man on the moon, China was struggling to feed its 1 billion people during the decade-long Cultural Revolution. The US was enjoying a favorable economic environment, and China, on the other hand, was faced with a completely stagnant and ruined economy coupled with widespread famine. But nearly two decades later, in light of vast economic reforms, China opened up to private businesses and foreign investment. Dominant state-owned bank turned savings into financing tools for roads, rail links, and ports, all this while foreign firms were forced to set up alongside a local partner, encouraging the transfer of technology. As a result, the economy grew 90-fold over the next four decades. But history clearly shows that plagues and wars are things that either cause the downfalls of particular order or cause a rethink. So when these disasters arise, a void is created waiting to be filled by a superior nation or nations.
I think it's not about, you know, either one pole or the other. You know, we might enter into a bipolar world or ideally a multipolar world. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a complete downfall. You know, the world needs the West. It's not about either or. It is about how we can live together. But if the West keeps on going into this direction, it might be a downfall, especially when you look at the economy. How are they going to manage when the dollar is not going to be the global currency? Now the dollar being a global currency makes the U.S., gives the U.S. this power to print endless paper, which is backed by nothing. So that's, if we talk about downfall, well, we might have an economic downfall, because the day that the dollar is no more the global currency, hegemonic currency, then you then will experience hyperinflation, and it could be extremely dramatic.
In the past couple of years, not only China, but several sovereign nations, including Russia and Iran, demonstrated the power which can be gained through sovereignty. And countries relying on the West, on the other hand, presented an example of the problems that could arise upon relying on others. From the formation of new allegiances such as the BRICS or the G20 to a shift away from a unipolar world and dependency on the US, all signs indicate a shift in global order towards a multilateral world.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak. on Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station. I am a Muslim.
Islam my deen. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Youth Station. This is IRIP English Radio. I'm your host, Zainab, and I have with me my co-host,
Asma.
Asma, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, sister.
How are you doing?
Just fine. It's a pleasure to be with you always.
Same here. Life does not go always the way we want it to go.
Most of the time, let's say.
Most of the times, yes. There are like sorrows, there are tragedies,
obstacles, ups and downs.
Yes, of course. There's
downhills.
So how do you deal with them?
Pretty much difficult.
It is, I must say.
Yes,
it is
difficult.
The one who goes through a tragedy realizes how difficult it is.
Yeah, it of course is difficult, but we know the nature of living is to cope with different situations. We're not here to go into a candy store and to be all happy like little kids.
Yeah.
Life is going to sometime be pretty much dark, let's say. Black, gray. And it's not always about those colorful things and images that we have in our minds.
Yeah.
And we all are tragic figures.
We are.
If we consider life as a novel, every single one of us has got a novel with different chapters.
Wow.
There are chapters in which we're going to have ups, and there are chapters in which we're going to go through the downfall.
You reminded me of Imam Ali alayhi salam, who says that there will be a day that will be in your favor.
Yeah.
And there will be a day that will be against you.
And the most important part of his saying is that when it is with you, don't be so happy.
Yeah.
And when it is against you, don't be so sad.
Exactly.
Because
and
everything
that's how we completed
is temporary.
It. Yeah.
So things are not going to last forever. Tragedies that happen in our life are very difficult.
They are.
And sometimes they would kill you. Nobody is going to live a life without tragedy. If you're a mother, if you're a sister, if you're a father, if you're a brother.
If you're a country.
Yes, if you're a country.
Yeah.
You're going to go through too much of terrible situations. Zainab, since you're a mother, tell me, what is the tragedy for a mother?
I think a mother goes through all the tragedies from like very beginning to the... Especially
I guess the future of our children, as a woman. Right?
If as a woman you are very much concerned about your body image, that's something going to be tragic for a mother after she delivers a baby because you're not going to have that very model
She's
kind of
no
figure
longer
after that.
The girl she used to be.
Exactly. And then she has to go through a lot of things. Like as an independent woman, you were like free. You didn't have to feed. You didn't have to do so many things. I won't say like
there
being
no
a mother is a tragic part.
I
was just saying if women, because women are mostly concerned about their body image. I've seen women spending billions.
Yeah, so this is physically speaking.
Yeah,
spiritually speaking, I guess it would be the future of your children.
If you plan properly, it's not going to be tragic. But the most tragic part is going to be if your child sees some injury, some danger, or at some times even death. So that's the point that's going to be very, very tragic for a mother.
I guess death is a tragedy for all of us.
That is, indeed.
Yeah.
Like,
even if a neighbor, a not your immediate family, just a relative dies or a friend of yours passes away, you just feel like everything is collapsing around you.
Yes. Yes, you feel. That's the biggest tragedy
and dealing
like,
with
one
that
can.
Is going to be very difficult, especially about
the
case of death.
For the first-class relatives.
Yeah.
For the very closest relatives.
Oh, my God,
it's
that would
be
so
very,
harsh.
Very, very cold.
Yeah.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
It is always very difficult for me to soothe somebody who is going through that tragedy. You know, you do not know what to tell them in order to soothe their pain. Because I guess it is impossible. The only one who can alleviate their pain is Allah himself.
And yeah, and that's why he said that I'm going to test you.
Yeah.
At certain points of life, with your, sometimes with your life, with your mm-hmm. fruits, with your whatever I have given you, I'll be testing you.
Yeah.
And he says to his prophet, like, give glad tidings to those who were patient.
Yeah.
And who said, like, when we tested them with some tragedy, they said, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un.
So we are from him and we will be back to him.
Yeah. To him we belong and to him we shall return.
Yeah.
So that's one of the verses mm-hmm. very, very close to my heart that helps you always. It should not be only said like. There's a concept even in our cultures that this is the verse which should be read only if someone passes mm-hmm. away. No, whenever you are in a tragic
in
situation.
In all difficulties.
It should be read yeah. in all difficulties. It's not some like some that kind of verse that you have to recite only if someone passes away. No, you
yeah.
have to recite it constantly whenever you are in depression, when
you
you're going through a tough time. It's going to help you.
There's also another kind of tragedy. In tragic stories, those tragic figures will go through a fatal error. Sometimes we do a mistake that is going to lead to the downfall of our life. You know what
okay.
I mean? And those errors are also going to be the cause of that tragedy. So sometimes a sort of a special scene would also be considered as a tragedy in our life.
If you take me somewhere else, if you also marry a wrong person.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's going to be a biggest tragedy.
That is a very sad tragedy.
That's a living tragedy. Like, if someone
yeah.
passes away, you
mm-hmm.
forget it with time. Like, forgetting is one of the blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. If
yeah.
you were with the same thing, you would have died with the same person. But since you forget, that's
mm-hmm.
again a blessing. But when you're living and you're living with that tragedy, it makes things
That's
so difficult.
That's an everlasting tragedy.
Yeah. Sometimes you know why it happens. Sometimes you think that you're compromising something just for a minute or two. But
yeah.
you don't realize your compromise actually drags you into a tragedy, big
yeah.
tragedy. And you have to compromise every now and then in your life.
Uh-huh.
So yes, in terms of choosing partners as well, we have to be tricky, we have to be choosy, we have to choose wise.
Yeah.
So otherwise, you're going to
so
end up in a
tragedy. So life is very difficult. We always have to pick things perfectly.
And you have to. You
yes.
have to be wise.
That is the difficulty of life. If you go with the flow, then things might come in your way and then they would cut up everything.
Yeah.
So another tragedy is a tragedy that happens to a country. When a country goes through decadence, when everything is every good thing is losing their meaning and the bad things are taking their places. That's the literal translation of decadence.
Exactly.
When everything is going into a downfall.
I was just wondering,
downfall.
What is she saying? So
yes.
you gave the translation of that.
Yeah.
You explained the meaning and that was a literal. That's something.
You know, all countries have got their time. All cultures, all countries have got a time of decadence.
Yeah.
And when decadence happen, people usually do not go for meanings and concepts.
Yeah.
Everything would stay on the surface. And everything turns to be some shallow sort of thinking and just going for the appearance, not for the depth of the ocean you have in front of you.
Asma, we'll continue this session. We'll talk about more tragedies and how to deal with them
mm-hmm.
after a short break. The listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is the Youth Station. We're talking about tragedies and how to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, Asma, you were saying countries also go through tragedies, not just human
yeah.
beings. They lose their cultures.
Yeah. This is one of the sort of tragedies that
okay.
might happen to a country. Also, we have war.
War, yeah.
War is the greatest tragedy that everyone knows. Yeah. There's some sort of
economic tragedy.
Yeah, you know, there are some very special tragedies that are very much clear and dominant, and everyone knows about them.
It's imperialism.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Imperialism.
That is very true. Yes.
So,
but when you come to the personal scale, you would say a heartbreak that happens after, just as you said, when you pick the wrong person, when your love turns out to be something that was just a hallucination.
Nightmare.
Yes. It is a sort of a tragedy.
It is.
And when you lose someone dear to you, it is a tragedy. When you deal with sickness, it is a tragedy.
Yes.
When you do sin, it's a tragedy. And in a larger scale for a country, war, famine, and decadence are great tragedies that might happen to a country.
Sometimes just trusting a wrong person.
Yeah.
You end up in a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
You trust, you invest, and then you end up in a tragedy.
Yeah.
Mostly it happens in monetary things. When you're dealing
yes.
with money and you trust blindly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you don't check the banks, you just try to make policy, for example, for your kids.
Yeah.
Like you asked me in the beginning, I'm a mother, what would be a tragedy? I'll be...
Bankruptcy is
yeah,
a tragedy.
Yeah,
yes.
It is, because I'm just killing myself to save something for my children.
Yeah.
And then something happens because of this blind trust, so blind trust will lead up.
Yeah,
and
blind trust is also a tragedy.
So that was what I was saying, that blind
yeah.
trust on someone can lead you, can
mm-hmm.
you can end up in a tragedy. So you have to be ready to deal with them. But alhamdulillah, you know, Islam has guided us at all the places to be wise, to be choosy, to be patient.
Yeah,
to be patient is very, very important. You know,
yeah.
we have one of the words in Urdu, when someone passes away, we didn't say the person passed away. We say the person did intiqal. Which
well,
is,
yeah.
we have derived that word from
the
Persian.
The truest form of saying that.
Yeah. yeah, we have derived this word from Persian, but we really did not know what's the meaning until I came here and I here understood the meaning of intiqal
yeah.
is to transfer. So they actually go from one world
mm-hmm.
to another world. We actually use a very good meaning, and
yeah.
that's how we say that person passed away. We never say a person died or any other word. We say that a particular person has gone through intiqal.
Yeah, so that's a better word for that, because usually when you say death and die and whatever, you just
means
think
it's finished.
Yeah.
yeah, finished.
But when you use that word, you actually are giving the connotation
having that concept in your mind,
mm-hmm.
Using such kind of words, or having those patient kind of verses of patience in your mind, in your heart, working upon them, will make all tragedies.
Optimism
yeah.
will help the tragedies.
Will help you go through them. I won't
yeah.
say like tragedies won't come into your life. They will.
No, we
but
are
you will
human
be a different
beings
person.
It would for sure.
Sometimes
come.
You will take it as a test, like one of the
yeah.
verses is, we will test you
mm-hmm.
through this and that and that.
Yeah.
But you have to be patient. So,
yes, we have to.
So Allah says that I am testing. Allah is saying that I am giving you tragedies in this and that form. And He's again guiding you what you have to do. You have to be patient over there.
Yeah, you have to be patient, and you have to put your trust on Him and make sure that He's going to help you pull through. And by the help of other people, you could come up with a solution.
Exactly. You have to ask for help.
You could find a way out of that tragedy.
Yes, looking for a way out is very important
mm-hmm.
because, you know, just to come out of tragedy is to accomplish something good. And it's said that to accomplish something good, you have to dream as well as act. Just being like telling myself or calling myself, I'm a religious person, I'll be patient, I'll be waiting for Allah
yeah.
to do the things. No, no. God helps those who help themselves.
Yeah.
So I'll be working on
mm-hmm.
The solutions.
Yeah.
The way out.
Yeah.
So
we shouldn't sit and cry for it. We should actually act for it.
Yeah. And like go out in nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Try to look for
Take
other
refuge
blessings.
In the people who would
and
help
make
you
a,
in nature that would
make
help.
A list
mm-hmm.
of make
priorities.
A list, make a list of blessings
mm-hmm.
and tragedies.
Yeah.
When you look at the blessings, they will be definitely countless.
Yeah.
And when you look at the tragedies, they will be very few number. And those tragedies you have to work upon with patience, and all the solutions we told you today.
Absolutely.
Thank you, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen to our session again, you can go back to our official website. That's www.parstoday.com. There you'll find a tab, Call of Islam, and find our programs by just going to the search tab, and you can search your station and other programs. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The population of monarch butterflies in North America has been falling rapidly in recent years, a decline largely unabated by government action to protect the imperiled insects or to fight the climate crisis that is pushing them to the brink of extinction. Dear listeners, please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Climate Crisis Pushes Migratory Monarch Butterflies Onto Endangered List. Stay tuned for more. The International Union for Conservation of Nature formally listed the beloved migratory monarch butterfly as endangered, citing dire threats to the subspecies posed by the climate crisis, deforestation, pesticide use, and logging. Dr. Bruno Obrell, the Director General of IUCN, the world's leading scientific authority on species conservation, said the new listing highlights the fragility of nature's wonders, such as the unique spectacle of monarch butterflies migrating across thousands of kilometers, a reference to the insect's remarkable biannual journey across North America. To preserve the rich diversity of nature, we need effective, fairly governed, protected, and conserved areas alongside decisive action to tackle climate change and restore ecosystems, Obrell added. In turn, conserving biodiversity supports communities by providing essential services such as food, water, and sustainable jobs. The population of monarch butterflies in North America has been falling rapidly in recent years, a decline largely unabated by government action to protect the imperiled insects or to fight the climate crisis that is pushing them to the brink of extinction. Echoing recent research attributing the monarch butterfly's decline to the climate emergency, IUCN notes that climate change has significantly impacted the migratory monarch butterfly and is a fast-growing threat. Drought limits the growth of milkweed and increases the frequency of catastrophic wildfires. Temperature extremes trigger earlier migrants before milkweed is available, while severe weather has killed millions of butterflies. The western population is at greatest risk of extinction, having declined by an estimated 99.9% from as many as 10 million to 1,914 butterflies between 1980s and 2021, the organization observed. The larger eastern population also shrunk by 84% from 1996 to 2014. Concern remains as to whether enough butterflies survive to maintain the populations and prevent extinction. Additionally, IUCN stressed that legal and illegal logging and deforestation to make space for agriculture and urban development have also destroyed substantial areas of the butterfly's winter shelter in Mexico and California. While pesticides and herbicides used in intensive agriculture across the range kill butterflies and milkweed and host plant that the larvae of the monarch butterfly feed on. Anna Walker, a member of IUCN SSC Butterfly and Moth Specialist Group, said recently that while it is difficult to watch monarch butterflies and their extraordinary migration teeter on the edge of collapse, there are signs of hope. So many people and organizations have come together to try and protect this butterfly and its habitats, said Walker, who spearheaded the monarch butterfly assessment, adding, from planting native milkweed and reducing pesticide use to supporting the protection of overwintering sites and contributing to community science, we all have to play a role in making sure this iconic insect makes a full recovery.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear listeners. You're listening to IRB Radio, and I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And today we are talking about principles of friendship. Under the principles of friendship, I want to talk about something very important that we need to be looking at. While we're talking about friendship in life, we're talking about a very important item that we need in life. Friendship is a very good thing. Friendship can shape your life and turn your life from A to Z, as the program states. Now, one of the things that we need to consider, or the important thing that I need to tell you guys, is what are the main points for us to consider in order to, how can one be a successful friend in life? How can I be a successful friend? How can we build successful friendship? Now, one of the main points that will help us to build or to, you know, to bring up a good friendship is for us to engage or to build up good relationship. What do we mean about this? For any one of us to gain friends and for others to befriend him so as to have a firm relation and friendship, we must relate and live with them in a good manner. And among the acts of good relation is that we should meet them with an open face, smiling, and a respectful way of kind. For this will make others come to him, love him, and befriend him. Whereas a frowning face, someone who is coming with a sad face, frowning face, you don't look happy, will never attract anybody. Rather, it will only keep people away from such a face. So among the main things that we need to consider while we want to build a successful friendship, a successful relationship, is for us to build a good relationship between ourselves and the person that we need, him or her, to be our friend. And how can we do this? Through smiling, through having a good face, showing good energy towards the person you want to be your friend. And definitely, we are going to get good results out of that.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back, dear listeners. How are you doing? You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio, and I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. Now, we've been talking about principles of friendship, and we were talking about how to achieve a successful friendship, how to be a successful friend. We say that in order for someone to achieve a successful friendship, he or she needs to build a good relationship. And we explained good relationships by saying that you need to approach people in a good manner, in smiling faces, in good attributes. You need to approach people with good energy and don't just go to them and, you know, talk to them in a bad way. So a smiling and an open face definitely will show friendship and a source of attraction to others towards the person with such a quality. So attracting their love, attracting their feeling, making them feel good towards him and his love towards them. All this is going to definitely make them be attached to you. Indeed, smiling and good reception with an open face and good words will attract others and open the already closed gates between us, because definitely as human beings we're living in a world where the gates are closed from each side. My gates are closed against the other side and the other side has closed their gates. So for me to open those gates and bring up that good relationship, bring up that healthy relationship between us, I need to bring good relationship to come in a smiling way, good energy, good perspective. Because some people at times live in sentimental deprivation and social disaffection. Some people are depressed. They're sad in their life. They've grown up not knowing what love is. People have not been loving them enough. But when you associate with them with good manners, they will feel that now you have made a nice atmosphere available to them. And through this, you have helped them gain their love and affection towards you. Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salam says or gives us a psychological analysis of such a condition by saying the smiling of a believer towards a believer is a good manner. Whenever you smile to a believer, is like you've done a good act, an act that God will love, an act that God will reward. He will reward God, Allah will reward you for doing such a manner, for just smiling to that particular person. So this shows us how important smiling is to our lives. So what we're trying to say here is that one of the best ways for us to build a good, successful friendship in our lives is for us to build good relationship between us and the people that we need to be our friends. We need to make them feel good, make them feel that they're welcomed, make them feel that this is the place you need to be. Thank you so much for listening to our program. Until next episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
In the limelight.
In Britain, Amnesty International has criticized the immigration plans announced by Tory leadership candidates Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's political correspondent Aubrey Allegretti. The piece is titled Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss Accused of Cruelty Over Rwanda Style Deal Promises. In Britain, Tory leadership candidates Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss have been accused of cruelty and immorality for promising more Rwanda-style deals to remove asylum seekers from the United Kingdom, as charities claimed the pair were pandering to party members' hardline views. Amnesty International read criticism of immigration plans announced over the weekend by the Conservative leadership candidates, saying the dreadful pledges would come at great human and financial cost. Other human rights groups, opposition parties, and the right-wing Adam Smith Institute think tank also condemned the proposals on grounds ranging from ethics to the crippling costs. Hostile briefings by the two camps intensified over the weekend as they prepared for a crunch television debate hosted by the BBC on Monday evening, with ballot papers set to drop through members' lettuce boxes in just over a week. The row about immigration threatened to overshadow their latest announcements, with Rishi Sunak pledging to take tougher action against China by banning its network of Confucius Institutes, while Liz Truss announced plans to cut red tape for free ports and create new investment zones with fewer planning restrictions. Both promised to push ahead with the plan to send hundreds of asylum seekers to Rwanda, which stalled last month after an intervention by the European Court of Human Rights. Rishi Sunak said he would do whatever it takes to get the Rwanda plan off the ground and operating at scale, and vowed to pursue more migration partnerships with other countries. In a 10-point plan on immigration, Rishi Sunak said he would cap the number of refugees the United Kingdom accepted each year, tighten the definition of who qualified to claim political asylum, and withhold aid money from countries that refuse to take back those whose claims were denied and criminals. In an article for the Sunday Express, caretaker Prime Minister Boris Johnson insisted he had delivered a key pledge to take back control of Britain's borders, but the former Chancellor contradicted that assessment. "We do not have control of our borders," Rishi Sunak said, adding that immigration should be legal, orderly and controlled, but at the moment it's none of those things. Rishi Sunak's plan to house migrants in cruise ships instead of hotels to save money was criticised by Liz Truss's campaign, which said the move would be likely to amount to arbitrary detention and a breach of domestic and international law. Pressed in a media interview on whether his proposals would be legal, Sunak did not give clear assurances, instead insisting no option should be off the table. The Foreign Secretary also said she was determined to see the Rwanda policy through to full implementation, as well as exploring other countries where we can work on similar partnerships. She pledged not to cower before the European Convention on Human Rights and to reform Britain's relationship with the Strasbourg-based Court of Human Rights so it works better. Although she is, unlike Sunak, a Brexit convert who voted Remain in the 2016 European Union referendum, the Foreign Secretary is seeking to present herself as a true heir to Boris Johnson, who will finish the job of overhauling immigration policy. Frontline border force capacity would be increased by 20% if she became Prime Minister, Liz Truss promised, allowing more channel patrols to take place to help curb the number of small boat crossings. Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak were accused by Amnesty International of making promises and policy based on nothing more than what is thought to appeal to some Conservative Party members. Steve Valdez-Simons, the charity's Refugee and Migrant Rights Programme Director, said it was the same as it had been for the last 3 years. Steve Valdez-Simons added, "It is why our asylum system has collapsed into chaos and backlogs, all at great human and financial cost." He said, "It is dreadful that those who aspire to lead are showing no capacity for leadership, which requires focus on what is possible, necessary and lawful. Instead, they're setting out on the same dismal course of blaming people fleeing persecution, lawyers and courts of law for all the ills that our politicians continue to heap upon everyone, rather than taking responsibility for making our asylum system work fairly and efficiently." Zira Hassan, Advocacy Director at the Joint Council for the Welfare of Immigrants, also said, "Both Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss were showing their fierce commitment to cruelty and immorality by trying to abdicate all responsibility for people forced to move to the United Kingdom." Zira Hassan continued by saying, "They want to expand the hostile environment and ramp up the brutalization of refugees for political point scoring. Their plans will only destroy more lives and tear more families apart." Concerns were also raised over the value for money feasibility of the Rwanda plans, which have cost taxpayers £120 million in exchange for up to 200 asylum seekers being relocated. Emily Fielder, head of communications for the Adam Smith Institute, said it was ineffectual because, in reality, barely any flights to Rwanda will take off, leaving an asylum system continuing to struggle with a huge backlog and crippling costs. Emily Fielder added, "Rather than governing by press release, the Conservative Party should look towards engaging more constructively with our European partners, introducing safe routes for those fleeing persecution and implementing vital reforms to clear the backlog of legacy of asylum cases." Yvette Cooper, the Shadow Home Secretary, said it was dismal to see Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss competing to extend an unworkable, unethical, unaffordable, high-fraud risk Rwanda scheme that she said would only make trafficking worse. The Liberal Democrats said both leadership candidates wanted to throw away more good money after bad and should never be trusted again with taxpayers' money, let alone trusted to treat asylum seekers with decency and respect.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common. The following is the text of the speech delivered on June the 28th, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of the top officials and employees of the judiciary. The divine traditions are laws. How do laws work? The law is about a certain situation, and it has a certain degree and result. If you put yourself in that situation, the result will definitely come. If you help the cause of Allah, He will guide you. The Quran 47:7. Helping the cause of God is the situation in this verse. If you help God, the result and decree is His helping you. If you put yourself in this situation, the result will surely come. There is no doubt about this. There is no doubt about this. These are divine promises. The Quran contains God's explicit command to us. There is not even a single bit of exaggeration, contradiction, or the like in them, God forbid. However, the condition is that you must put yourself in that situation. If you do, that result will be given to you.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Islamic Republic moved forward in this way at that time. We were victorious whenever we moved in this way. That is, whenever we put ourselves in a situation to which one of the divine traditions applied, the Almighty God gave the result. And that if they should keep to the right way, we would certainly give to them a drink of abundant water. The Holy Quran 72:16. God says that if you stand firmly, He will quench your thirst and satisfy your need. We stood firmly. God satisfied our needs. The opposite is also true. The divine traditions are of different kinds and types. In one place He says, if you are grateful, He will certainly give you more. In another, He says, and if you are ungrateful, my chastisement is truly severe. The Holy Quran, Surah 14, verse 7. This is a tradition too. Being ungrateful means being ungrateful for God's blessings. If you are ungrateful for the blessings, you do not use the blessings, you misuse them, you abuse them. If you do these things, my chastisement is truly severe. That is one of the divine traditions too. If we put ourselves in that situation, being ungrateful, that result will come upon us.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost, you guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Evidence continues to mount that Europe's sanctions campaign against Russia is exacerbating the euro currency's persistent and perhaps structural economic troubles. France's finance minister just released a depressing outlook. This year's economic growth will be cut almost in half and remain between just 1.4 and 1.8% until at least 2028. The Eurozone's second largest economy now looks too weak to drive what many have long called the world's most unstable macroeconomic bloc.
From 2008 to 2017, the Eurozone's average annual economic growth was just 0.6%. From 2018 through 2021, the growth rate was even worse, just 0.5%, putting the Eurozone on track for a second consecutive lost decade.
Despite the clear failure of austerity policies in producing growth, President Emmanuel Macron will continue with far-right economics in his second term. His finance minister boasted of plans to cut much-needed public spending to a 20-year low, citing a desire to submit to Brussels' entirely arbitrary 3% rule on public deficits.
We're talking about a systemic crisis in Europe, and one which existed before the crisis caused by the pandemic, as well as the crisis caused by the need to find alternative energy sources other than Russia. What it all adds up to is that a state of crisis continuing still.
This week, the new and deeply fractured National Assembly passed the Emergency Purchasing Power Bill, aimed at countering still-rising, once-in-a-generation inflation. At just 20 billion euros, it has been widely criticized as an ineffective and even superficial measure.
For many people, this bill is insufficient in comparison with the scope of the crisis. The same criticism has been made of a government fuel rebate of 18 cents, which began in April. However, it is 20 billion euros which will help the poorest level of society and students deal with the effects of high inflation.
France's government claims that upcoming austerity rollbacks planned for the pension and unemployment system will actually produce broad economic growth this time. The European Central Bank is raising interest rates, even though the Eurozone is already on the brink of recession. Sanctions and not diplomacy continues to be the destabilizing Western choice regarding Ukraine. The long-term economic outlook for France and the Eurozone appears bleak to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Thousands of Palestinians took part in funeral processions of Mohammed Azizi, 25, and Abdurrahman Subh, 28, who were killed early Sunday during an Israeli military raid in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus and its old town. The Fatah Armed Wing Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade says the two Palestinians were its members, while the Israeli military says the operation in Nablus was launched to apprehend armed suspects. Following the raid, a general strike called across Nablus to mourn the death of the two Palestinians.
The operation this time was more violent than the previous ones.
Clashes were heavy as Israeli soldiers raided the neighborhood from all sides. Live ammunition and rockets were fired towards the houses. I believe such ammunition are only used in wars between countries.
Israeli forces raided Al-Yasamin neighborhood and surrounded a house, which the regime said Palestinian fighters had barricaded themselves in. Eyewitnesses described the raid as a full-blown military invasion, while the Palestinian Red Crescent reported 19 injuries, including 10 people hit by live fire. The Palestinian leadership has condemned the operation, with a spokesman of the Palestinian president saying the Israeli crime will not defeat the Palestinians and will not break their will.
It's a barbaric act. It's another crime committed by the Israeli forces. They fired rockets at a house and they knew people were inside it. Two young men were killed and many others were wounded. It's obvious that the entire region will remain in a circle of violence until the occupation ends.
At least 52 Palestinians have been killed since late March, as Israel has intensified its aggression after a wave of deadly anti-Israel operations that led to the killing of Israeli soldiers. The Israeli military has never stopped its raids in the occupied West Bank. Such operations have often led to the death and injury of Palestinians, like what happened in Nablus. Regardless of how many people are killed or injured in the raids, Palestinians say resistance is their only option until they free the occupied territories. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
We all remember her from pictures. At the time that her father was assassinated, Armita Razai Nejad was only 5. Her mother, Shohra Pirani, was also wounded in the attack. Today, her story has found its way on the silver screen, revealing new dimensions of how Dariush Razai Nejad was martyred. What made the ordeal even tougher was the fact that Dariush was shot right in front of his wife and his 5-year-old daughter. The international community, human rights advocates, and even the UN remained silent. This prompted Shohra Pirani to write a letter to then-U.S. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, denouncing in the strongest terms the assassination of researchers and scientists. Her move inspired a group of filmmakers to make a movie based on the story.
About 5 or 6 years ago, we decided to make this movie. I believe that as filmmakers, we had a responsibility to do so.
This is a very important part of our contemporary history. It's a story that just had to be told. It should have been done sooner.
I was preoccupied by this incident for years. How can you kill someone right in front of his 5-year-old kid? I did some research, and as soon as the opportunity came up, we decided to make the movie.
Hanas, which literally means breath, is a biopic that dramatizes the story of Dariush Razai Nejad, a nuclear scientist that was assassinated in 2011.
This movie is actually a document that shows how Iran has been a victim of terror attacks. There aren't many countries in which such brutal terror attacks have happened. The assassination of a scientist and researcher while his family is watching.
This was a very educational movie showing us the animosity of Israel and the United States.
I found it to be an educational movie, both important and interesting.
I learned a lot. It was very interesting.
The feminine touch has turned this biopic into a must-see, and now, in an open letter, Armita has called on all foreign ambassadors in Iran to watch the movie, too.
In the words of Armita, the daughter of the martyred scientist Dariush Razai Nejad, Iranian or non-Iranian, everyone should watch this movie just to catch a glimpse of the atrocities and human rights violations that are committed against the Iranian people, while the international community remains silent. Kisumi Shah Ahmadi, Tehran.
South Korean peace activists gathered at Imjingak, a peace park near the border with North Korea, to call for an official declaration to end the 1950-53 Korean War. They also want the agreements made during previous inter-Korean summits to be upheld.
Let's join together 80 million